Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, going to take a look at sustainable housing today with Dennis Goodenough. Dennis is from Janesville. He's been a green home builder for more than 30 years. He's a staunch advocate of smaller and greener homes and has been that way for his entire career. I remember talking with him many, many years back before it was kind of in to talk about green and talk about smaller, and he's never strayed from that. So I'm glad to have him with us today to talk about green building and maybe passive solar homes or passive homes, let's put it that way, and take your questions and comments as we move along today. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Dennis, probably kind of makes you feel good to know that the things that you've been advocating for over 30 years are kind of popular now, are getting to be popular.
Well, I think we're being forced into it by the economic trends. I mean, there's not a whole lot that we can do otherwise. It's been a long time in coming, and I think people in general don't usually change until there's some outside influence in their life, either incentives through the government to go green, or they start to feel it in the pocketbook. And for heaven knows we've been feeling it in our pocketbook, you know.
For a long, long time. So what's your vision of a home? Give us your vision.
Well, I endorse smaller and well-insulated housing. The biggest savings and the cheapest, the quickest paybacks you can get are simply to super-insulate a house. We've known that since 1980. It's the fastest payback once it's in place. There are no moving parts. It keeps paying dividends for the life of the structure. If you add to super-insulation, you're essentially making a thermos bottle out of the house. You don't let the cold air in or out. Yeah. You know, it keeps the house warmer in the winter and cooler in the summertime if you have excellent insulation. That's the first line of defense. This is just simply low-tech stuff, you know, very easy to do. Mm-hmm. Follow good quality control measures and have a lot of insulation. Add to that passive solar gain, which is free heat. That means you put the windows on the south side of the building in conjunction with movable insulation, so at the night and in the night it doesn't let the heat escape back through the glass. If you want to, it's important to add some mass to the structure so that this passive, this radiant heat energy has a way of going into the mass, and it slowly radiates back into the building.
And when you're talking about, just to break in there, when you're talking about mass, somebody might say, what do you mean by mass?
Well, it's all the heavy materials in the house. I like to use the floor. I advocate building without a basement so that the sun shines in on just the either tile or concrete slab or whatever it is, usually a dark color, and it absorbs all of that radiant heat energy that's coming in the house. And it basically moderates the indoor air temperature. High mass keeps a building cooler in summer and warmer in the wintertime. The mass usually has a certain level of heat in it, a lot of heat in it, at a fairly moderate temperature. And then the fourth strategy that I advocate is earth sheltering, which reduces the amount of exterior sidewalls and so on that are exposed to the weather.
So those four things, follow those four, and you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Well, that's the biggest chunk of your energy savings. So you can save somewhere between 60 and 75% of your energy needs right there. And the building system that I've come up with saves 10% on your total building costs. Normally, when you go to any kind of energy savings or so forth, it usually adds more money to the project. By the way, I've configured the building. I actually get a net savings of 10%. A cost workup for housing that I designed for Habitat for Humanity a few years back. And when we did a comparison to the average building that they were producing, I used their same building suppliers and their same subcontractors. The building that I designed for them was actually 10% less than their average cost. And the building also had a garage connected to it. Habitat normally doesn't put a garage on their house because they think that's sort of an option.
An option. And you were still 10% on it.
I was at 10% below their average cost, yeah.
Oh, boy.
And then on top of that, the residents get to save a lot of money on energy besides. Yeah. So it was a win-win situation.
So when you have a house like that that's tight to begin with, then, well, what about things like solar or, I don't know.
You're talking active solar now?
Yeah, active or passive. Well, passive is you've already built in.
Right. I mean, the softer technologies, the ones that I just mentioned, of course, chief among those, again, is insulation. That's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know, once you employ the simple strategies mm-hmm. first, what's left over in terms of your energy needs are so small that if you start to employ high-tech equipment, the payback is much, much longer. I mean, the next step really is after you've got a house that's well-insulated, passive solar gain and so forth, the next step is to go off the grid. Then you start to bring in high-tech stuff like windmills and photovoltaics and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know?
But that's a pretty big step. But for now and for a long time to come, I just can't believe that the high-tech stuff, and that it needs maintenance, you know, I mean, yeah. And so on, where insulation doesn't need that.
Well, lots of people want to have questions for you, Dennis. And by the way, do you have a website?
I sure do. ERHonefamily.com.
ERHonefamily.com.
Correct.
People can go to that. I wanted to make sure we got that in there.
Yeah, thanks.
Jeff emails and wonders, you know, when you're building or remodeling, how long should appliances be kept? This is probably something you've dealt with. You know, he says, for example, I have a fridge and a stove that's 12 years old.
Keep until they wear out. There's a lot of embodied energy. That's not the weak link in the whole process, you know. I'm a maniac about this, you know, just use it up, wear it out, you know. If you get into major repairs, you need a compressor, then it's time to recycle the thing. But just keep it until it wears out.
And then when you, and then look for.
Then look for energy efficient stuff, sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kevin and Tomahawk, let's turn to you. Kevin, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Oh, I was just wondering what your opinion would be on what is the best insulation for our walls and for a new home, and then how thick would somebody really want to build, a 2x6, 2x12? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Okay. I advocate double wall construction. My houses have a wall that's a foot thick. Exterior wall, 2x4 framing, and then an interior wall that's also 2x4 framing. And there's a lot of different methods you can – well, there are a couple of different methods. You can use the cellulose fill. I just insulate myself and use fiberglass. Mm-hmm. We wind up with about an R40 in the side walls, mm-hmm. and then the attic you can pump as full as you want. 20, 22 inches will give you roughly an R60. I can't remember all the numbers. I just mm-hmm. talk to the insulators at the time when they go to put the – stuff in the house.
And in terms of windows, what are you looking at?
The windows get to be, once you super insulate, all of a sudden the windows get to be the big loser in the house. You change the whole heat loss dynamics once you make a thermos bottle out of the house. And you should get the best glass you should get. Again, if you have solar access, put it on the south side. And put the windows in the areas of the house that you're going to use the most, like the living areas. If you want to view out and look out, mm-hmm. That's where you should have the windows. And then conserve in the bedroom areas and the work areas where you don't need to look out as much. You just want to let some daylight in and so on.
That all makes sense. Richard in Oshkosh, let's turn to you. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I went to school back in the early 80s when oil was still the major heat source before gas really took over. And even back then, they said hot water was the most efficient way of heating a house because it's a nice, steady heat source, and you don't have that up and down curve like with hot air. Forced hot air that, you know, that to me it seems like it's less efficient. Out east where I came from, that was the primary way that you would heat a house would be hot water.
Well,
why it's so different out here.
I personally believe in the KISS principle. Keep it small and simple. My houses, my own houses have been heated by electric baseboard heating. I've thought about putting hot water heat in the floor and use it heat the hot water during, use an on-peak, mm-hmm. off-peak energy system, mm-hmm. and then use the off-peak energy to heat the hot water and then put the heat into the floor. That starts to get technical again, you know.
Yeah.
So far, the simplest systems have worked the best for me. Once you get the floor heat in, Wright used to do that. Once you've got that in there, then you're running pumps and so on to get the water circulated. And I find that the inconvenience of not having a more uniform heat delivery system in the house is, for me personally, is not worth the additional machinery.
Okay, there you go. Thank you for calling. Nancy in Evansville, let's turn to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Yes, I was wondering about your advice on the thermal blanket for a water heater. And my second question, do we have the windmill small enough for individual home use at this point?
Yeah, put the thermal blanket on the water heater. You want to stop the standby heat loss. I mean, that's something you can do yourself, and it's not very expensive. As far as windmills for houses, I'm sure there's people that are making them.
The payback on those has not been, at least the numbers that I've seen, hasn't been really real good.
Yeah, and there's the maintenance and so on, and some cosmetically sometimes people don't like them, you know. I don't know what they're doing to bats and birds, but it's high-tech again. You know, I mean, I think a lot of times this efficient high-tech equipment, once we put it in our homes, just allows us to get by without feeling guilty, you know. We can go ahead and over-consume and feel it's okay because we've got all this high-tech equipment, you know. I was at a green-collar symposium this summer, and one of the speakers said that people who buy hybrid cars just wind up driving more, and they just spend as much gas or consume just as much gas because they think, well, I've got this hybrid now. It's okay for me to drive wherever I want to. And I think that particular effect is in the home building or home industry too.
On to Teresa in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
We have a three-season porch on the south side of our farmhouse. It has a concrete base, and my husband enclosed it with windows 20 years ago. And there's so much escaped energy and heat that we lose at night. Is there any other ways to capture that without spending a ton of money that we could direct it into the house?
Hmm.
And I'll take my answer off the air, okay?
Okay. All right.
I don't know if you've got what kind of doors you have between patio doors or whatever between the porch and the house. I've got a similar situation where I'm living now. I just open up the doors on my mm-hmm. porch while the sun is shining in there, and usually it's the porch is warmer than the house is, you know.
Yeah.
I guess there is no simple answer in that situation. If you're there, it's warmer out in the porch, open the windows or doors, whatever your access is, and as soon as the porch cools off, close the doors again.
Yeah. Fan system, that's not going to really do much good for you to have a fan running it, pushing it in.
I don't know. Experiment.
Yeah. Yeah.
See what works for you. Why spend the energy?
Let's take some more calls here, and we will take some more calls. Dennis Goodnow, our guest today from Janesville, been a green building home builder for more than 30 years and a staunch advocate of smaller and greener homes. Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking green building today for your home with Dennis Goodnow. His website, by the way, he mentioned it earlier, it's ERH. One family, that's all one word, ERHonefamily.com. If you want to take a look at his website and see what he's up to in addition to what we talk about here today. And Gene in Oshkosh has a question for you. So let's turn to Gene. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Larry and Dennis. I got the bug about halfway through the summer that I thought I should add additional air insulation in the attic. We have a very well-built 2,400-square-foot ranch, so it spreads, and there are a lot of windows, but they are all double, they are all two-pane windows. My question is this. I got on the telephone and called half a dozen, at least, insulators. And I got the same story that cellulose is a far better product than is fiberglass, because fiberglass filters air, but it does not insulate air. And there's an ancillary here, is the insulation I have up there just barely covers the rafters now, and how much more should go up there. And but basically this cellulose, they didn't want to have anything to do with fiberglass. No. Could you speak to that, please?
Well, it's been a while since I insulated a house. My own was the last one I insulated a house. I just generally look at the insulators that I'm working with, go by their recommendations, check the R values for the depths and so forth. If you're looking to increase your efficiency in the house, the first thing I would do is to have an energy audit. You know, maybe added insulation in the attic isn't the way to go, or maybe it's you don't need to put as much up there as you do as you think you need to. On the other hand, maybe you need to put more up. The energy audit, to me, is the first thing that happens. That'll give you the best bang for your buck, where to spend it, and so forth. As far as whether it's cellulose or fiberglass, when I get around to that point, I think, you know, what are the insulators telling me? They know the products.
Mm-hmm.
I bone up a little bit on it before I do the project. I've always used fiberglass in the past in the sidewalls. And as far as the attic fill is concerned, I leave that up to the insulator.
Okay. So, but you could go with either way would be...
Right. And the products change all the time. I mean, there's InsulSafe 1 and 2, and they're continually... I don't know whether it's a marketing gimmick or what it is, but they continually come up with new products, you know.
All right. There you go, Gene. Thanks for calling. Sharon in Shatek, it's your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wonder if that gentleman's name is good enough. We have families up here with that name. At least that's how it's spelled. Anyway, my question is about envelope house. I've looked at one to purchase, and I'm moving from the northern part of Wisconsin to Zone 4 down at Green Lake. And I'm familiar with the concept. I've lived in passive solar, which was 12-inch walls and 4 feet of sand and insulation underneath the slab. It was a great house. I don't know why I ever sold it. But anyway, this is an older home. Would that make it probably to think twice about it? The north side is bermed. The whole basement is bermed into the north side. The windows are 2 stories high, and the heat sink has a brick floor.
Okay.
Well, what are the, you know, what the budget building costs are? Do you know what it costs to heat and cool the place during the summer?
No, I didn't get that far when I was looking at the house and the purchase price. And one of the reasons is that the living space, well, the basement is all finished rooms, but the kitchen and living room and everything is upstairs.
Yeah.
And I'm past retirement age, and I don't want to climb stairs, so I'd put an elevator in it. I'd have to put a...
You're going to live alone, or you've got family with you? Or?
Well, no, I would have my... I'm going down to be near my daughter and my grandchildren.
Okay.
And I would have my sister-in-law with me, but I don't know if that is the age of that house. It's envelope all the way around.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the envelope structure.
And it was designed by an architect.
Yeah, that was popular right around the 1980s. There were a number of different strategies that were employed.
That's when I think it was built.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to pan the project or anything. I would go with size. I would stay with the smallest size house you can get by with. I mean, the bigger the house, the bigger the problems. The smaller house, smaller problems, you know.
Would it be better to build new? Because I'm considering that.
I'm a new home builder, so yeah, I would say go ahead and build new. Insulate it well and keep it, you know. There's two things.
I want heat in the floor.
Yeah. Well, there's a number of ways to do that.
I've lived with it where it was a hot water heater.
Yeah. Well, the main, like I said before, it's consumption in housing is size and heat and energy, and those two can be solved. You know, I mean, the energy that's used is a result of size and insulation. You know, size is part of the system.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So Dennis is saying, yeah, consider, and by the way, Dennis's last name is spelled like Good Enough. He just pronounces it Good Enough. There you go. Thank you, Sharon, for calling. Appreciate it. And we have an email from Chuck who says, we currently have a 40-gallon electric water heater that's more than 15 years old. At what point should it be replaced, and what might be the best option? He was wondering about tankless systems, for example. The new unit could be either gas or electric. How much of an advantage would there be to keep the current heater as a tempering tank?
I don't know. I would still stick with it till it fails. Once it fails, then put in a gas system if you've got access to gas. As far as the standby or on-demand heating systems, I've been electric in the past, and electric on-demand systems didn't come in till later. I'm considering looking into those the next time I build. Mm-hmm. I still favor the water heater. It's the cheapest to mm-hmm. buy initially. It's got the payback is short on it.
And, yep.
Just keep it as simple as possible. Keep it simple, you know. You can always add the high-tech stuff later should energy costs really get out of hand. And component costs, once they become more popular and are produced more, component costs is going to come down. So stick with the standard stuff that's working well right now. Water heaters are more efficient than they used to be and so forth. And so same way with dryers, all the appliances. But you don't have to go high-tech.
And Darren in West Dallas wondered if you have any experience with straw bale construction, and is this a viable construction method?
There's a lot of people out there that like straw bale. As a matter of fact, I think, and I just read an article saved for me by my ex-in-laws with straw bale construction, and I think it's the first one in Walworth County, I believe, and yeah, it works. You know, if you want to use straw bales, I really don't know that much about them. I favor framing, normal stick framing, and double wall construction. It's what I know best. That's what I've lived in. I'm not saying straw bale is bad. I just haven't looked into them that much.
Pete in La Crosse, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry. Hey, Dennis, I wanted to talk to you about solar domestic hot water, specifically because as houses are better and better insulated, the energy spent to heat water for showers and laundry and et cetera gets to be a pretty high fraction of the total energy bill of the house. And I was wondering if you thought that this was a good use of money as far as putting on solar domestic hot water to attack that part of one's energy bill.
Well, I guess it's all in what you want to, you know, what you want to spend your money for. Domestic hot water systems, I mean, they work, and there's a lot of them that are being installed.
I've heard that the payback on the solar hot water systems can be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I say, that was one of the areas we got involved in first in terms of energy conservation. I think another thing that maybe a hot water reclamation system might be a cheaper alternative, where you run the wastewater through a heat exchanger system, and you preheat the water before it goes back into the, or before the supply goes into the water heater.
Heat exchanger on the drain pipes, then?
Well, yeah, there's a way of, and there's another thing that I'm considering. See, energy costs where they're at right now, for the most part, don't justify a lot of these systems. You know, mm-hmm. I try to make my house set up so that these things can be put in afterwards, make allowances and so on. So once the energy costs start to get high, or once a new system comes along that really is very cost effective, you can add it later on. You know, mm-hmm. But if you got the basic package, you know, you've got a good, well-insulated house mm-hmm. to begin with, and you're not using a whole lot of energy until energy costs go up, and they will eventually, the more technical equipment just has too long a payback.
Okay, but it's good that you've designed in the space, et cetera, so that it can be added when it becomes affordable.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for calling. Alan in Appleton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I'm actually putting some windows in a house now. I'm a contractor, and I think it's kind of funny, too, when I see all these huge houses that are, first off, a waste of material. I mean, just the material that goes into building some of these things, and then to heat all that space seems ridiculous. But it's my uncle kind of built his retirement home similar to what you're talking about. He built a slab house and then put tile on the whole first floor, and the southern facing wall of the first floor is all windows. And then what he did was he figured out the angle of the sun for summer and winter, and he made the overhang on the roof so that during the summer you wouldn't get any direct light onto the floor. In the winter, the light comes in, heats the whole floor up, and keeps the house at a pretty reasonable temperature. He heats the thing all year long, but it really doesn't cost him anything to do it, so... I mean, it's kind of interesting if you put a little thought into it, what you can do. So,
yeah, absolutely. Interesting comments. Comment from you, Dennis?
Yeah, well, that's the way it's been done. I mean, it's that's sort of passive solar gain 101.
Yeah.
Provide the right overhang. You know, let the sunlight shine in on something, and it's free heat. Yeah, we've known that for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, and we just need to do it.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate your call. And sort of along with that... we had an email from Paul in Grayslake. He has a personal concern, and he says one I believe influences other people in consuming more space, whether within a structure or even in ever more separate structures on larger lots, is a sense of privacy. While I enjoy other people, I want to be able to have some time to myself. Part of that means not being able to not hear other people's activities or otherwise constantly be reminded of their presence. Modern structures seem to have gone in the opposite direction with thinner, noisier interior walls, hollow core doors, that sort of thing. And then to compensate, people seek greater physical separation in terms of distance at opposite ends of a larger house. Does sound insulation play a role in making a house comfortable? Especially in smaller structures, are there things that you can do? It seems to be a rather modest investment that might pay big dividends in this regard, if insulating walls between rooms and so forth.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, he's right in that people have continually gone to larger and larger rooms or houses and so on to get the privacy. Mm-hmm. There's ways to get it. I mean, when people are living in the same house, you only have a limited amount of privacy anyway. You know, I mean, you've got to provide some space in every house so that an individual can get away and have some time and space to themselves. As far as the soundproofing goes, yeah, if that's a problem and people are concerned about it, build it into the house. There's ways to do it, for sure.
And it should be done. All right, Eric in Neillsville, on to you. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, hi there. I was just curious, with your houses being insulated so well, do you have a moisture problem?
No.
Do you bring in outside air?
No, there's when I first built my first house, I put an air-to-air heat exchanger in to take care of the ventilation problems. And the components at the time were not of very high quality. I had all kinds of problems with cross-contamination and everything else. I finally just ripped it out, and I found the easiest way was to just open the windows. In the wintertime, the air outside is so dry. And the mass to the fresh air that you bring in is so small that it isn't worth the cost of the air-to-air heat exchanger. Just install a quiet vent. Or what I've been doing is an oversized bathroom exhaust fan, and I put it on a rheostat, a one-hour rheostat, or twist timer, excuse me. And I have the bathroom fan, exhaust fan, set up so that it will provide one theoretical air exchange per hour. And so if I start to see a little moisture build up on the windows or something, I just turn on and let it run for a half hour or 15 minutes, and it clears the pollutions right out.
There you go. All right. Thank you for calling. And Actually, Kathy had a question about that. With a home 14 years old, moisture around the windows as soon as the temperature goes to 32 degrees, that causes the wood around the glass to get damp. Even the windows that face south get moisture at the bottom. She says, we wrap all our windows in our 1,800-square-foot house in plastic. That fixes the problem. It keeps the house warmer, saves us energy, and looks awful.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times people want a lot of humidity in the house in the wintertime because their furniture's falling apart and whatnot. But if you have high humidities in a house in the wintertime, it's pretty tough to make a vessel out of a house, and that humidity is going to go into the walls one way or another. You've got to sort of keep the humidities down. And so I guess I would check, and maybe she's got an April error or something, find out where all of that humidity is coming from in the first place. But if you're able to stop it, you certainly shouldn't be running over 50% humidity. I don't think you're going to have moisture problems. I run 40% in my house. I keep a hygrometer right on the wall and keep tabs of it. That's pretty low for most people's comfort, but I don't want the problems that come with high humidities inside. So check and see what you're running inside for humidities. If you're running 70% or somewhere around there, see what you can do about getting the humidity down.
And even some people advocate at 30-35% humidity.
Yeah. I mean, it's nobody wants to wake up with a nosebleed in the morning. I know, but
yeah.
But it's that's a problem. You've got to keep vapor pressure is going to equalize inside to outside, whether it's summer conditions or winter conditions. You know, and you're really taking a risk by putting too much humidity in a house in the wintertime. Even with the modern building codes where we've got polyethylene and stuff, you know, vapor barriers in the interior walls, it still goes in the light sockets and all the other stuff. And on top of that, the vapor barrier usually gets sliced to pieces by the sheetrockers before they put the sheetrock on. So it doesn't do a whole lot of good. You got to balance the vapor pressure.
Do you have any, Drew wonders in an email, do you have any information on underground building? What do you know anything about the book about Building Underground by Mike, is it Oehler or Ehler? O-E-H-L-E-R.
Yeah. I advocate what I call earth sheltering, not underground building, because the structural needs to support underground building get to be pretty expensive. Yeah, it's tight. You know, you're living in a cave or something that's underground. It's going to be tight. Infiltration is totally stopped, and then you don't need as much insulation. But the structural additional costs are pretty sizable. Yeah.
Hannah in Muskegon, Michigan, let's go to you now. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. We recently bought a house, it just has that wood exterior siding on, that wood board. And it does have a vapor barrier with fiberglass insulation underneath that, but there's that wood siding is just the only exterior wall structure. There's no additional wall structure with that on top of it. And I'd like to know what I can do to better insulate it from the outside.
Okay, so it's not sided? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's that wood exterior siding.
Oh, okay.
Is the texture, what is it, sheet goods?
It's like 4x8 sheets.
Okay, it's got vertical grooves in it?
Yes, right.
Okay, that's texture 111, which they've, you know, in less expensive houses, they use texture 111 not only as a sheeting material for structural integrity, but it doubles as siding material.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So you could go right over the Tex 111 with, a half inch of maybe styrofoam, and then put siding on top of that. Again, the energy audit's the way to go there. Get somebody in there that knows.
Yeah, you're in Michigan, and I've suddenly blanked on the energy, where to get an energy audit here in Wisconsin, but there are, I'm sure in Michigan, there are places you can go to get your energy audit.
Yeah. Can I ask one other question regarding geothermal?
Okay.
We've been trying to evaluate whether or not it would be better to get natural gas or geothermal. And my understanding with natural gas is that the prices are probably going to go much higher in the future for petroleum. And if we get geothermal, is it just a one-time cost and then we pay for the electric that gets it running?
No, I don't know. This is a this is a tough question to answer. Go back to your energy auditor. You know, guy, geothermal is pretty pricey. I know there's I believe there's incentives right now that make it more attractive. Okay, but you're talking a major investment.
Something around.
You got oil right now?
Pardon me?
You've got oil heat right now?
No, well, right now it would be propane.
Propane? Okay. I'd stick with that. I'd stick with that for a while. Just stay with your furnace in good shape and everything.
It probably needs a little tune-up.
Yeah, well, just if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And just get your house well insulated. And then just wait and see what comes down the pike. And either because we're forced to have things improve or because... people start to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. Things will get better, I'm hoping.
Thanks, Anna, for calling. And Diane in Rice Lake, hi.
Hello, and I want to say thank you for having the show, and thanks to Dennis for his excellent advice. I would like to get back to the four basic principles that Dennis started the show with, because I think a lot of the callers have been talking about, you know, some good things, but also maybe periphery things. And if we could promote those four principles, I think our whole society and the green revolution would take place. Mm-hmm. We've been living in a house that incorporates those four principles for 27 years here in northern Wisconsin. And 22 of those years, we didn't have a furnace. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, we did put a furnace in just because we thought maybe someday we'll want to sell it, and no one would believe you could live in a home in northern Wisconsin without a furnace. But we indeed did that for 22 years. And I just want to say these principles really work.
Yeah.
And I think you should repeat those four principles. Mm-hmm. They should be plastered on every contractor's wall. And how can we promote this?
Mm-hmm.
And is it being done?
All right, and we're right at the end of the show, but let's go back through those four principles.
Super insulation, passive solar gain, mass, and earth sheltering. And I also like to say that the green economy pretty much is dead in the shell until we get some politicians who want to do something about it. We've got a lot of corporate foot dragging, and I think there's some powerful energy entrepreneurs who are basically social and economic and political cannibals when it comes to this kind of thing. And until we get those people online, we're going no place.
Dennis, thank you so much for being with us today. I want to remind everybody that your website, if people want to go to that, is erhonefamily.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Dennis Goodenough of Janesville, been a green builder for more than 30 years and very staunch advocate of smaller and greener homes and those four principles that he gave us as well. So great to have him here, and I'm sure we'll be talking about green building down the road. But we're going to change gears on you a little bit here on the Ideas Network, as we pretty much always do at around 11:45. Jerry Apps is joining us, professor emeritus at UW-Madison, and he has a new book out. It's called Cranberry Red. I just finished, speaking of red, I read it. That's R-E-A-D. I read it. Last couple of weeks ago, and really enjoyed it. And we'll talk about agriculture, the cranberry industry, and his book, Cranberry Red, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.